This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Newspapers just aren't what they used to be. Newsrooms are smaller, and big stories are being missed. For example, the Flint Journal was forced to apologize recently for not telling voters that a city council candidate was also a convicted murderer until a day after he won election. So how will people stay informed when newspapers and their staffs are shrinking? Joining us to discuss the state of the newspaper industry is James O'Shea. He's the Howard Marsh Professor of Journalism at the University of Michigan. His book is Deal from Hell. It looks at the struggles of the newspaper business. James is also the former editor of the Los Angeles Times. And joining us is Mike McLaren, the executive director of the Michigan Press Association. Now, Mike, you do not believe newspapers are dying. Why is that?
Well, I guess I would answer that question with a question. Do you know what Sony Corporation's first product was?
I don't.
Many people think it was either the Betamax or a Walkman or something like that. Actually, it was a rice cooker.
Oh, well.
A rice cooker. And yet, Sony Corporation clearly is known for many different products now than it was when it was making rice cookers right in post-World War II Japan. So it goes with the newspaper business. I'm not suggesting we're going to get into the rice cooking business, but Sony Corporation reinvented themselves. They evolved into becoming, one would argue, probably one of the top consumer electronics companies in the world. Newspapers are going to continue to evolve as well. They will still be in the news business. They might not be in the news on paper, newspaper business forever and ever, but they are in the midst of an evolving process, and I think that's something to bear in mind. Any healthy company or industry that is not content with focusing on the here and now and is rather looking at how they're going to evolve to meet consumer needs and tastes and preferences into the future is a pretty critical element for their success.
James O'Shea, you were the editor of the Los Angeles Times. You are now teaching future journalists at the University of Michigan. We see headlines from all around the country about newspapers having to fold, having to gut the newsroom staff. Can you give us an understanding of what is really at the heart of the economic realities facing newspapers?
Yeah, it's a 50% decline in their main source of revenue, which was advertising. It happened in two phases, one in the 90s, in the late 90s and early 2000s, when they lost their classified advertising franchise to organizations like Craigslist, which began offering advertisements for free, whereas the newspapers used to charge from them. It was a lucrative source of income for them. And then secondly, as the Internet has developed, the display advertising, or the kinds of ads that you see throughout the front sections of newspapers, are going away, and they're migrating to all sorts of different kinds of media, including social media and the Internet and Google, and all of these other people who are coming into the market and basically offering, frankly, a better way for a lot of these firms to advertise. And so, you know, it used to be you'd charge $2, let's say, for a newspaper, and you were depending on advertising to provide, you know, it cost you. Let's go back a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You're delivering something to somebody's door for $2, say, and it's costing you $4 to get it there.
Okay.
When you consider the driver, the print, the paper, the ink, the reporters, everything. And so what you were doing is, you know, you were hoping that you'd get the $2 for delivering it there, and then you'd get $2 more in advertising, which would cover your cost and actually a little more and make it profitable. So when that $2 from advertising starts going away, you become either marginally profitable or unprofitable, and that's what's really going on. The industry is trying to figure out, is there some other source of revenue that they can adapt so that they can make up for that loss of ad revenue? And so some of them are trying paywalls, and some of them are raising their prices. The hard part is a lot of papers, particularly the metropolitan dailies in the larger cities, are in such a – they're really in a life and death struggle, I think, and they spend so much of their time trying to stay alive and keep the doors open. They aren't really – they don't have the time to sit down and really come up with strategies for alternate sources of revenue, which is really what's needed. And when they can't come up with another source of revenue, they start cutting. And then you get into a kind of a vicious circle. You cut the size of the paper. newspaper, you cut the amount of news in it, you cut their staff, and you don't have as many reporters or photographers. And then, you know, your advertisers that are already kind of going away start looking and saying, well, we're not too happy with what's going on here. Mm. We're going to take our ad dollars elsewhere. And so in response to that, they cut again. And you get into this cycle of cutting and cutting that could that's really destructive. And so I think the situation probably is different in smaller community papers than it is in metropolitan dailies. But all papers are facing this dramatic shift in their revenue sources, and that's what's causing the problem.
I would agree, and I would say that, to your point, one of my concerns is with the smaller market papers, while you're right, they're not dealing with this in such stark instances right now, I'm worried about them for the future because they're not having to face some real critical decisions and looking at new ways of reaching their audience in ways and formats that they want to be reached. While recent research that just came out from Newspaper Association of America says that 70% of adults read a newspaper each week in print or online, that's a pretty strong audience. And other media, traditional media, if I may, TV, cable, radio, with some exceptions, NPR being one of them, they're losing audience dramatically as well, and yet they care not to report on it. Sadly, that's one of the problems with my industry, newspapers, is they're quick to seize on data that says newspaper print circulation has fallen, when really their audience is getting larger. Mobile users in particular have boosted newspapers' online audience by 50%. One of the things that's not necessarily discussed too often is how newspaper-specific information, whether it's produced by the L.A. Times or Detroit News and Free Press or Ann Arbor News, is being retweeted or Facebooked or referenced on other social media. That's a pretty large audience as well. But to your point, clearly the print franchise took a tremendous hit when Craigslist came around. That was the that was a painful wake-up call for the industry, and it's still trying to reinvent itself along the way.
From a journalistic perspective, my concern is this. You know, if you look around the country today and you say, okay, who's really covering, who's manning the courthouses, mm-hmm. who's going in the state houses, who's manning police beats and city halls? Virtually all of them are being staffed by newspapers. And it's kind of what I call the journalistic infrastructure. It's the people that actually go out and report on government and the kinds of things, the kind of information that people need to make good decisions about how they're governed. But as the newspapers are cutting back, way, way back, and there was a study done in Baltimore, Maryland, a couple of years ago, by a journalistic organization called the Project for Excellence in Journalism. And they isolated a lot of stories, and they said, okay, where did this story come from? Who actually did the reporting on this story? And 80% of the reporting that came out of the city of Baltimore over a six-week period were done mainly by newspapers. Mm-hmm. But the Baltimore Sun, which is the main newspaper there, has cut its staff by at least 50% over that same period of time. So the question becomes, you know, the journalistic infrastructure is crumbling. And who's going to do that reporting when all of a sudden the newspaper says, you know, I can't afford it anymore. It's over. Who's going to do that? How are people going to get that information? That's a critical question because that goes right to the heart of what our country is and what a democracy is. And a democracy is founded on the idea that if people have the right information, they'll make the smartest decisions. But if they don't have that information, or in the alternative, if the information they're getting is merely propaganda or something put out by somebody and then picked up by newspapers who just need the content, you're looking at a fundamental shift in the way we live. And I think that's a real problem.
That was James O'Shea speaking. He is the Howard March Professor of Journalism at the University of Michigan, former editor of the Los Angeles Times, and his book Deal from Hell looks at the struggles of the newspaper business. And he's joined by Mike McLaren, who's executive director of the Michigan Press Association. I have to wonder, we were talking about the kinds of draconian steps that have had to happen in newsrooms and in newspapers across the country to make up for this loss in revenue. Certainly here in Southeast Michigan, readers of the Detroit Free Press and Detroit News had their home delivery cut to just Thursday, Friday, and Sunday as part of all of this. And I'm wondering, have readers moved to the online editions, or worse for newspapers, have they just learned to live without their daily paper?
Well, they are increasingly using the digital products, and I think the News and Free Press was bold and smart in how they executed this. They were really the first enterprise in the country that stopped every day delivery, home delivery. And it was a risk, and David Hunke, the publisher at the time, I think put a lot of thought into it, that increasingly people are using digital products, the news and free press in particular, and yet anybody can get those print products delivered to their home if they make special arrangements with the news and free press. But you're seeing that increasingly in other municipalities as well across the country. So I think we're not done with that, that you're going to see more and more people doing that as people get more comfortable with digital products and the devices that you can use to read them, in particular cell phones or smartphones.
And James, do you see younger people not having a problem with that? Because I have to say, I think I speak for most of the baby boomer readers who say, I prefer my paper in my hand. It doesn't feel the same flipping through your iPad. But does that not bother the future readers, the young people?
I think young people read it differently. I actually think there's some sort of some information they like in print. So I agree with Mike. I think that the industry is all together. The daily newspaper is a doomed institution in terms of delivering a print product to somebody's doorstep every day. It's uneconomical. You can't do it. You're losing money every time you do it. And what in most papers, you know, like I think the Free Press is now Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, or Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday. Those are probably their profitable days. Most newspapers have days where they're profitable and days when they're not. And they always stuck to the 7 days because it was a daily newspaper and it always was going to come out. But what they've done, I think what he did was very smart because he said, okay, I'm going to cut out the days that are unprofitable so I don't have to lay off journalists, so I can actually put content in the paper that has some value and that people will pay for. So I think that was a smart move. I think you're going to see it all over the country. And I think younger people, they sort of like a Sunday paper where they can sit down when they have the time and go through it. And so they don't really have an objection to the paper. So I think they do have, you know, having it come to their house every day when they can get it on their iPad or their cell phone and the immediacy of that information. So if you're looking at news and things that are happening, I think they prefer that on a cell phone or on an iPad where you can get it right away. But if it's something that you want to sit down and read and think about, I think they still prefer print. And it's interesting with students. A lot of times you'll say to them, if you're going to use a book in class and it's a textbook, they'll want to go to the bookstore and buy the hardcover or softcover book. But if you're just going to do excerpts out of a book and they aren't going to use it and it's not going to be something that they'll have to refer back to time and again, they'll just go ahead and get an e-book. So it's, I think there's a distinction. It's not completely so black and white as that young people don't like print. I think they like print, but it depends on how they're going to use it.
To your point, to follow up on it, I think, frankly, the term daily or weekly newspaper is becoming an anachronism because most of those newspapers have websites or digital services that they're offering. And you've got weekly or traditionally weekly papers that are updating their websites every day with late breaking news or local news flashes. And so,
and now
really,
video, too. I'm noticing
Good heavens, the Free Press has won several Emmys in
the last
few years.
Yes, for their video work. So it's, again, pushing the envelope and looking beyond. What do you each say to the young people who want to be journalists? James, you're working with these future reporters and journalists. What does their future hold? And are there new opportunities that, say, the web offers them that didn't exist for either of you when you began your careers?
Well, you know, that's one thing I do talk about. And I remind them that, you know, when I got into journalism, those many years ago, it wasn't high paying. You didn't make a lot. No, you didn't get into journalism to make money. You got into journalism because you really wanted to be a journalist and provide people with information. And the difference is that I had a fairly clear path on where I had to go. I knew I should go to a small paper, get some experience, and work my way up to a larger paper. They don't have that clear of a path. But when I got into the newspaper business, you had to be a millionaire several times over to own a newspaper. You had to buy the plant. You had to hire the printers. You had to buy trucks and gas and all of that. Today, I myself, in 2009, started a news organization in Chicago. We had no money, It was just a bunch of journalists, and we got operating out of an office over an Einstein bagel shop. And we basically put together a news organization, and for 2.5 years, we supplied Chicago content to the New York Times, the best paper in the country, in the world, maybe. And so, you know, I say to them, while you don't have that certainty that I have, you have opportunities that I couldn't have had. I mean, I just couldn't start a newspaper when I got out of journalism school. But today, someone coming out of journalism school can actually start a news organization and thrive with it. And you have an opportunity for more freedom of expression. And I think these online news organizations, they're more creative in their approach to covering things and covering the news. So I do think there are opportunities, and I think in some cases they can be exciting.
To your point, as far as being able, you know, what the future holds for journalism, I would say to anybody, learn to tell stories in new and compelling ways. You're no longer limited to simply ink on paper format. That you can, if you learn to shoot video, if you know XML or HTML web design, that can only help you reach audiences with compelling stories that are going to make a difference in their lives. Whether it's Kwame Kilpatrick's Fall from Grace in Detroit, or how the local water authority was delivering tainted water to residents in the community, and that caused a cancer scare. There's stories out there day in and day out that students can cover in new and compelling, innovative ways, and there will be an audience for that on a variety of platforms. And I think that's something that a lot of journalism schools have recognized and are reconfiguring their coursework to instill those skills in students.
We'll have to leave it there. That was Mike McLaren, who's the executive director of the Michigan Press Association, and he was joined by James O'Shea, who's professor of journalism at the University of Michigan, also the former editor of the Los Angeles Times, and his book, Deal from Hell, looks at the struggles of the newspaper business. It was really good having a conversation with both of you. I hope we can do it again.
Okay,
thank
you.